working in the group Philip Walter, which basically is an experimental group working in quantum foundations and also quantum information implementation of protocols. So this work is a combination of different regions and different also subjects. One of the subjects is engineering and material science. Professor Hyun San from the University of Berkeley is involved in this experiment. Also from the theoretical side, Bori Bohe and Chasla Brunner, they are giving support for the theory. Okay, this is the outline of my talk. So first of all, I will talk about the motivation. In particular, I will talk about a little bit about quaternionic quantum mechanics. I don't know if you hear about this topic, but I will give more details about this, just to give an introduction and the motivation for our experiments. Secondly, I will make a short overview about what is the experimental status of this quaternionic quantum mechanics, if there is some experiments or no. And then I will present our proposal. Basically, it's in a short sentence, it's using single photons in a Sanyo interferometer with two different optical phases. So then results. And then very interesting part is that after publishing our results in archive, so somebody made objections and to say in some way, kindly, your experiment is not so useful. And then we will just a little bit to talk about our reply, how we respond in a paper that our experiment is correct. So, and then later our conclusions. Okay, the original motivation goes back to a paper everybody knows about, Birkhoff von Neumann, in this paper about the logic of quantum mechanics in the 1936. Which basically he said that in the proportional calculus or in the proportional logic of quantum mechanics implies that there is possible to represent the pure states of quantum system by rays of the on a Hilbert space defined on any associative division algebra. For example, this could be the field of real numbers, complex numbers, or quaternions. But you may ask, or you may wonder, what about what is you know about a little bit more of these hyper complex numbers? Also, you can find another numbers which calls autonions. So you may wonder if this is also true for the autonions. But the answer is no, because autonions don't satisfy the associative division algebra. So in a few words, we just take account that quantum mechanics in some way can be rewritten in quaternions. Okay, so the first guy to the first professor to develop a complete theory about foundations of quaternion quantum mechanics, it was Phil Kainsen, another with his colleagues, and then more recently, Stephen Adler developed a full theory in a book, Quaternionic Quantum Mechanics and Quantum Fields Theory. I'm not going to talk about the axioms or the hypothesis behind, but I want to focus only in one feature, or one characteristic of these theories. Okay, but you may ask, you don't know, what are quaternions? Well, quaternions exist before von Neumann before other guys tried to implement in quantum mechanics. So quaternions were discovered by Hamilton, and they are basically an extension of a complex number. So instead of having one real part and one imaginary, you have now three imaginary parts, where Q's 0, Q1, Q2, and Q3, they are real. And they satisfy this simple algebra. Okay, one of these main characteristics of quaternions that quaternions could not commute, which means basically you take two quaternions, QP is different from the multiplication of PQ. So people try to extend quaternionic quantum extends quantum mechanics by also adding these degrees the freedom, degrees of freedom in the wave function. Okay, so but later, in order to distinguish quaternions in quantum mechanics, Asher Peres suggests in this paper in the 1979 proposed two different configurations, two different experimental implementations for distinguish quaternions in quantum mechanics. So he basically suggests that you may look for manifestations of quaternions FS by using neutron interferometry experiments, which basically everybody knows that when you send a beam through a material, the beam gets a phase sheet here given by delta, and then if you make interference, you can measure this with another reference beam. You can measure in the phase sheet. So Peres suggests and said that okay, now let's put two materials, one which has delta phase sheet one, and the other with delta two. And then okay, so let's measure the phase sheet by means of interference, and according to complex quantum mechanics. You can see that the total phase difference, the total phase of these two materials is basically the sum. This is very, well, we know everybody that's trivial, but according to quaternion quantum mechanics, this could not be the case. This is not always is the case. So this is basically the original proposal of Asher Peres for an attempt to distinguish quaternions in quantum mechanics. So our motivation is basically to test complex quantum mechanics against not only quaternion in quantum mechanics, could be another alternative theories which basically use hypercomplex numbers but into the phase transformations. So my experiment in particular is focused to study this non-commutativity of phases. This is our main objective in our experiment. Okay, but what is, you may ask, what is the experimental status? Why no people are interested in this experimental people? It's not interested in this topic. So as far as I know, only one serious experiment is it has been done since the Asher proposal, which is basically is based in using a Mach Zehnder interferometer. Well, Kaiser and colleagues in 1984 present an experiment when they send neutron beams through two silicon plates, one here, and then for divide the beams in two beams, and then they recombine in a second silicon plate. Okay, so one branch experience two different phase sheet of different materials, in this case titanium and aluminium. So they place the detectors here for to measure the fringes in one case where there is no sample, and then one case the aluminium, and then they take away the aluminium material and then put the titanium. So they said, okay, what about if I put both together in different orders, for example, aluminium and titanium, and then titanium aluminium. And then I subtract the fit of these fringes, and then I can know what, if there is a difference of, on the phases. So they found that okay, there is basically a null result. They say okay, there is no quaternions, much less than 0.3 degrees on the phase. Okay, but what is our proposal? So later I will talk about more a little bit why there is no more experiments about quaternion and quantum mechanics. But At the beginning, we are nowhere so sure if this is going to work, but we found a mathematical background that it could be possible. And later we'll talk about this. Okay, what is our proposal? Our proposal is basically to use single photons in a Senya interferometer. Okay, what is the theoretical background? Well, our theoretical background is very simple. We use an instrumentalistic approach, basic operational approach, which basically we just define our phase operators, which are proportional to these numbers, which could be quaternions, complex, and then this is the identity operator. So this is our Sagnat interferometer, in which consists. Okay, you send a single photon through a beam splitter, which is we know that the photon can go in this direction or can go in the other direction, and then they bounce in the mirrors, and then they recombine in the beam splitter. Okay, if the photon goes in this direction, the photon can pick up the phase first B and then A, and in the other way around, they pick up the phase A and then B. Okay, according to complex quantum mechanics, the probability to detect the photon in this spatial mode is equal to zero. But okay, in the other spatial mode, all the photons are getting out in this spatial mode. So therefore, we just call to these two different modes bright pore and dark pore. Okay, but how we'll introduce the non-commutativity effects? We define quaternion phases, which basically is an extension of the phase. Instead of having only one imaginary part, we have these three numbers where phi 1a and phi 2a and phi 3a are real numbers. So okay, if you define your phases, you are assuming that your phases are quaternion phases. So you ended with the probability, with the ideal probability to detect the photon in the dark pore mode, which is proportional to the commutator. So in some way, the you can measure directly in this configuration that the contribution, the possible contribution of quaternions, if they exist. So I would say also that in this configuration, in the ideal case, it will be enough just to put the detector and then to count the photons, if there is true or no, and then to make statistics. But later I will talk about that this is, that could be no good idea to look for quaternions. Okay, because also there is another effect. Our Sagnat is imperfect. So we had different situations where always there is a tiny leak there. So that make also to screen or to hide the quaternion effect. So one of these possible effects are the spatial mode mismatch, which basically means that there is no good overlapping here in the beam splitter, or also the polarization mismatch. Maybe when they reflected, they pick out different phases, and then when they recombine, so you always get also a tiny leak. Or another possibility is that this beam splitter, well, at the beginning, for an ideal beam splitter, you are assuming that the 50-50 beam splitter condition is satisfied, but not always is the case. So in order to take account these imperfections on our system, we just say, okay, let's characterize the visibility of the Sagnat. Okay, but introducing these imperfections of our system, so the probability for detecting the photon in the dark pore is no longer proportional to the commutator, but is and somehow is related via this parameter, which is gamma, which is 1 minus the commutator over 2. Well, here also the probability the detecting the photon in the dark pore is also depending on the visibility of the Sagnat. Okay, as I said before, so In this configuration, in the ideal case, with no imperfection, it would be enough just to put the detector and to count if there is photons or not. But we expected that this PD very, very small. So therefore, we need to find another method to amplify this PD effect. So in order to do this, we interfere in the B and D ports, these two spatial modes. And then we ended with a coupling Sagnac. We coupling the Sagnac interferometer to a MAT sender. So which basically we recombine the bright port and the dark port in another bin splinter. And in order to balance the number of the photons, we place here another bin splinters. And then we scan the phase by just moving in a piece of electric. And then we detect the photons in the detector D1 and the detector D2. Okay, you made the calculations, and you get that the probability of this MAT sender, for example, in D1, is proportional to the visibility of the MAT sender. Okay, so the relation between the visibility of the MAT sender, the visibility of the Sagnac interferometer is given by this. So where our experimental goal is to measure basically the fringes of this MAT sender. So and then we can draw conclusions about the commutator. So we will study this visibility for different cases when the A and for example for the as the neutron guys made the experiment. For example, first of all, in order to characterize the errors, first of all we run our experiment with these phases. Then we just place one phase, let's say A, and then B, and then both together. But one of these advantage or setup that if you want to measure the phase sheet for the two phases, you don't need to take away. Just you place both, and then automatically you can get this information from the commutator. So, well, you may wonder what kind of phases you want to introduce. Well, Paris and the Paris suggestions, he said that more likely to have quaternion phases in complex quaternion amplitudes. But for the neutron guys, he suggests to use the phase shift is given by this parameter big, which is has two possible signs, negative and positive and negative, and they use for the neutron experiment. They use two different materials, titanium and aluminium, which titanium, if I am correct, titanium has positive scattering length and aluminium has negative scattering length. In our case, in optical analog, well, we use a material, A for example, with positive refractive index and negative refractive index. So we choose two different systems. For example, for the positive refractive index, normal liquid crystal, which induce a positive phase sheet. And for the negative refractive index, we use a novel material, which calls metamaterial. I will explain more a little bit how this works. The metamaterial is going to give us a negative phase sheet. This is basically our complete proposal to go to the lab and then to build the experiment. Well, what is material? You may wonder. Okay, maybe you hear about this, but basically they consist periodically or randomly distributed structured elements whose size and spacing are much smaller than the wavelength of the electromagnetic field. This is very challenging because if we wanted to use single photons, the single photons have the wavelength around 790 nanometers. So the structure should be around below to 700, 300 nanometers. And it's quite challenging to get these metamaterials at this size. So in nature, we don't found metamaterials. So as you can see here, the issue in material science, you had here the permeability and permittivity. And then you can classify what kind of materials you had. So as you can see, non-natural materials are found in nature. So it's just artificial materials that you need to build. So, but in which consists? So basically, you take two different materials, could be metallic or the electric material, which one has a negative permeability, and another material has negative permittivity. So and then you recombine it, and then you get the negative index refraction. So and then they will give you a negative phase shift. Okay, so in order to do the experiment, we start a collaboration with the professor Tan Lang from the Berkeley University, and then he gives us a negative index metamaterial, which is basically a Fischner structure. Okay, in which consists, well, this is the dimensions of the unit cell, and then you make several layers. This is a picture sent. Scanning electron microscopy. And then, okay, as you can see, well, we have silver, magnesium fluoride, silver, and silicon nitride. It's a different layers. As you can see here, the dimensions are below to the wavelength that we need to test, that we want to test it. Okay, one of these properties about the NIM, the negative index metamaterial, is that has a very low transmission efficiency, 30%. So in order to do this experiment, it was one is that after the photon passed through the sample, well, we had several samples, but these small points, which the dimension is 20 micrometers, but after passing these points, so we lose almost 90% of the photons. So also one of these main characteristics of these materials is that they are somehow polarization dependent. So we need to be careful when we send the single photons to place the correct polarization. Okay, this is the characteristics of our phases. As I said, for the positive phase, we use a standard liquid phase retarder, which basically is you had molecules where you applied a voltage, and then they move according to the electrical field. And then by changing the poles, you can induce a different phase shift. And here, metamaterial, they produce us for us, and as you can see, for around 790, the phase shift is around minus pi. So we define our experiment for the to have plus pi phase and minus pi phase. Okay, in order to generate the single photons, we use a very well known setup, the Sagnac skin, which basically we send the photons in a separable polarization state, H and B. Okay, this is the complete setup. So here we have the Sagnac single photon source, and here is our Sagnac interferometer, and then our Mach Zehnder interferometer. So we create the photons. One photon is sent is used as a heralded photon, and the other photon goes to the interferometer. This photon goes first to this mini splinter, which is, okay, we lose some of them photons. And then we introduce the photon in the Sagnac interferometer. And then, yeah, as I said, so one photon goes in the counterwise cloud, yes. And then this is, no, clockwise, and this counter clockwise. So, and then they recombine, and then we recombine both modes, the bright and the dark pore in another second binary splinter. We in order to increase the visibility, we set the polarizers, particular polarization, in order to care about the polarization for the metamaterial. And then we recombine in a a coincident counter to eliminate all the noise around. Okay, this is our measurements. So you remember, our goal is to measure the visibility of the MAT sender. Well, we had four settings. First of all, we need to characterize our apparatus. What is the experimental error? First of all, with the case no faces, we call it B no, and then we just place the positive phase, this case for the liquid crystal. We measure these visibilities. When it's done, we just go directly to testing quaternion quantum mechanics, for example, by just measuring the visibility. First, when the NIN is introduced to the SANYAC, and then with both phases. So in the practice, we just place always the liquid crystal, and you can just turn off and turn on to induce a phase. And for the negative index refraction metamaterial, it was quite hard to just put it in and put it out because there was a spatial mode mismatch. So therefore, we just we just always place the standard looking crystal, and just as I said, just turn on and turn off. But later, if we wanted to calculate the contribution or potential contribution of quaternion quantum mechanics, we just we just set fit the metamaterial and then just turn off and off the Luckey crystal. So in that way, we didn't move the metamaterial, always is there, but we just turn off and off in order to measure both phases. Okay, this is our result. Here are our four cases. For the no phases, this is a only single single run, single shot. We had in every case single run, and so in the upper row is the normalization data from the lower row. Also, well, you can see here, for example, what are the visibilities. As I said, in a single run and a single chop, so the visibility of no phase is equal to visibility of the Luckey crystal. But okay, let's do more statistics, not only one single run. So we repeat the experiment 402 times. So we found this is the bound that we found it for this difference. Okay, in order to test quantum quaternion quantum mechanics, we just we test the difference of the change of visibility between both and metamaterial in a single run. They almost agree with within the experimental error, but we want to go further and to make more statistics. So every point of this plot is the difference of visibility change of the introducing the liquid crystal. Remember, the NIM, the metamaterial, is always fits in the SANYAC interferometer. I will just turn off and turn on the liquid crystal. So by measuring the difference of this visibility, we can make histograms and to calculate what is the statistics. Okay, we found that the difference is 0.006 plus minus 0.005, and this is our bound to say, okay, in this case, we don't found quaternions. But you may wonder, okay, what about another effect, another physical effect? It's very well known that the SANYAC interferometer is rotating around a point, so it will induce a phase because of the delay of the photons in opposite directions. So you may wonder, what about the SANYAC effect due to the rotation of the air around the same axis? Okay, we calculate this this effect, and it's 10 to the minus 4, which is very small compared to this quantity. And also, you may wonder about the Faraday effect. In the liquid crystal, when the polarization is when the beam is inside of the liquid crystal, it could be possible that the polarization can rotate, and then you can also have an effect on this. Well, we characterize, and then the Faraday effect is even smaller than the Sagnat effect. But another thing is that these two effects only decrease the visibility of the Sagnac. It does not contribute or does not affecting so much our conclusions. Okay, now if you want to compare to the experiment of the neutron, so this number corresponds to the phase 0.03 degrees. So, okay, there is no quaternions. Okay, 0.03 is outside the high precision bound for to say this. But okay, so we're very happy to do this experiment. But suddenly, Stefan Adler published a paper questioning us the usefulness of our experiment. And he said basically, yeah, hey guys, your experiment will never see quaternions. And one of these arguments it was that quaternionic effects are likely to decay exponentially. Why? Because okay, if you write down the wave function of the in terms of quaternions, so in this case in a symplectic form, which is basically two complex wave functions, so the quaternion part is decaying proportional to the exponential of the negative of the, okay, in this case, it's inversely proportional to the wavelength and then to the position of the particle. So for a big distance like our experiment, it will be decay. So you will not detect never the quaternion effect. But his assumptions are mainly valid to non-relativistic case. For example, as neutrons. The main problem is that there is a no complete relativity treatment for massless particles such as single photons. The main reason is, yeah, second quantization. So if we look for a counter sample, we will tell to Adler that it's not the case, his theory is not applicable to our experiment. So therefore, so we work to find a counter sample. So in order to do that, we study the Klein-Gödel equation. We solve a particular problem, very simple. You had here the barrier potential. And then, okay, we say, okay, for massless relativity particles, we fit n equal to zero, and then we solve it, the equation in this region. So after making the calculations of phase matching conditions, written the wave function in the symplectic forms, then we found that not decaying quaternion phase still remains after the photon passed through the barrier. So which means in this case C8 and C2 is different to zero. So it means that in this counter example, so quaternion effects are still persisting. So we confound this results in this archive. Okay, so we published in archive the paper, and we say, well, your theory could not be applicable, and well, we are we think we are safe. And he responds, okay, I see, it seems okay. And then quaternion effects for relativity particle scattering can persist. Well, our summary and upload. Okay, our experiment is a real test. It's the first experiment, I would say, a real test for to direct search quaternion quantum mechanics using massless particles. The neutron experiment by itself is not conclusive because, if you take the Adler argument for the neutrons, so you will never see a quaternion in this framework. Okay, so our work enabled the combination of novel material with using standard quantum technology. Furthermore, so if you want to make more experiments in that direction, you can make several interesting possibilities. For example, you can make on chip, this basically the same idea of the experiment, but with the dimensions close closer to the wavelength of the photon. I guess it's going to be very very very, very demand because it's hard to work in that regime. Okay, this is our complete group. This is our experimental group, which the two people are involved in this experiment. And this is our theory guide support. And thank you for your attention.
Question. Hi. So early on, you had this equation saying that the probability of error counts is proportional to the commutator between the phases of your two materials. And so inside your interferometer, you have two mirrors, and there's also a beam splitter, which all those, those also apply phases to the light. Did you take those phases into account when you, came up with that equation?
You can.
How do they come into that probability?
Yeah, so when you take account, for example, the phase of the beam splitter, because it is one phase for the reflected, you may end it in a not proportionally to the commutator, but something similar to the commutator. So, but in this case, we just assume we assume that the phase commute with these phases. But yeah, you're right. So at the end of the day, you need to generalize the commutator to take account these Fs.
So I had a question, two questions for your negative phase. When you say negative phase, do you just mean that if you were to pass a beam of light in vacuum and in this material, the vacuum would pick up more phase?
No. With negative phase, I would say that, it has a different strange mechanism. For the Snell law. So when you send, for example, the beam like this, and then through the material, it's reflecting the same plane. But for negative interreflection, it's in opposite way, which means basically that in some way, instead of the phases go like this, so you may end it with a backward phase shift. You know what I mean?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like the electric field oscillates in the other direction?
Exactly.
Okay. And so then why was it important to have that? Like, why couldn't you just have two positive phase in your interferometer?
Well, as I said, Nachel Perez's proposal, he suggests to, because there is a possibility that both quaternions are parallel to the in the quaternion space, so it's just assuming that these two, if you want to test the commutator of two quaternions, you have to assume that they are not parallel. They are somehow in different with one angle, and then let's say these two different physical mechanisms give you this difference of the angle. That's why we're assuming that. Okay, one positive and one negative. But sure, you can do the experiment, both positive, but you may say, okay, maybe they are parallel because the quaternions.
Okay, so it's a property of the quaternions.
Yeah, exactly.
So I looked at your derivation in the paper, and one is assuming that the superposition principle holds. So if you look back at the Ferris paper from, I think it's 79, he has a quantity f. And if f is less than one, it's quaternionic. But then if f is bigger than one,
you violate superposition.
So can your experiment? Do you have any analog of that quantity in your experiment?
No, not really. We just go for the commutation relation. But yeah, you're right. So Asher Perez, the other suggestion is to study scattering process with three particles, and they found inequality. Which basically he said, if this violate this inequality, you have two possibilities. One, superposition principle is not satisfied, and the other, quaternion quantum mechanics can be real.
I guess you would have back reflection from the Nesser Maxwell, right?
Yes, of course. Yeah. So one of these challenges in this experiment is that you have transmission 30%, but you have around 40% of reflections. And if you do carefully the experiment, you may end
it. How do I get without back reflection? I mean, in the interference setup.
Yes, in order to avoid this bad interference, we just rotate a little bit the metamaterial and deviate the bad reflection from the detectors.
And there would be multiple scattering spell, right?
Yeah.
So you have to consider that in your calculation.
Yeah, in the calculation. Yeah.
So I'm maybe a little bit confused about the basic idea. The Sonic's in there because you're trying to look at the commutator and you're trying to go look at the different ordering of the phases, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So why do you assume that going through the elements in the opposite direction is the same thing as evaluating them in the opposite order?
Well,
it's not necessarily true in opposite.
Yeah, when in our common understanding, we said we said that the photon goes in this duration, well, and the other duration at the same time, and then recombine. And we just assuming that this is true. So of course that would be not the case.
No, but you're assuming that the photon, because you're sending it through the elements in the opposite ordering, it's the same thing as changing their ordering mathematically.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's not always true. Like for instance, if you have like a Faraday effect, that's not going to be true. So
okay.
I think it's that going through a given element in the opposite direction might not even be the same operator.
Right, exactly.
I think the ordering does get flipped, but something else could get modified.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something else can get modified as well. So that's how do you know, like, it seems like there's some sort of additional assumption in your experiment that it won't necessarily be true. Like,
we're assuming that the operators are the same in opposite directions. You can say it's not true. But we're assuming that's the case.
So let me put it the opposite way. What if you've done the experiment again with Faraday, something that had the Faraday effect where that's not true, then you would see a difference when you change, and could see the difference potentially when you see the change of ordering. Would you have assumed now that you have quaternions?
No. In this case, no, because...
So you're assuming something about the actual unitaries.
Yes, exactly.
Themselves.
Symmetry.
Because it seems to me your entire construction then looks just like this Faraday rotator, right? Putting in the quaternions means sort of breaking time reversal invariance, going through one way, going through the other, or different.
Mm.
So how could you tell that it's different because there's a magnetic field and not because you have quaternionic quantum mechanics?
Well, this is a hard question to do because, one of the reasons that also, we're assuming that there is no mechanism of interaction in the quaternion. We're just assuming that an operational approach just sending the light, and then the order will tell you about the if they commute or not commute. I don't know if it makes sense.
If there was an effect like that, wouldn't you see it when you just have a single element?
Yeah, so essentially, if you think that the single element is made up of multiple layers or something, if each of those was described by a quaternionic phase, then going through them in the reverse order would already not be the same, as Jeff is pointing out.
Right, if like you've done the experiment with each element individually and convinced yourself that...
I don't know.
I see.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I just have a naive question. So you wrote down this quaternionic phase,
mm-hmm.
and that's different than the usual phase that we deal with.
Yeah, so...
So if I want to, normal quantum mechanics, if I want to go from a complex number to a probability, I take the absolute square, I know how to do that. How do you take those quaternionic phases and turn them into things you measure, probabilities, turn them back into real numbers? What operation do you do?
Okay, well, so the only... So we didn't go... in the mechanisms, for example, for the wavelength or for the operators, we didn't apply a full quaternion quantum theory. We just assume that if there is a quaternion, so if you represent your phases with these three numbers, so you will end it with the probability to detect to the photon is not equal to zero. So this is our main...
No, I got that part. This is really not about the experiment, just a question about how to do quaternionic quantum mechanics. So how do you go from a quaternionic wave function to probability? So in normal quantum mechanics, you take the absolute square of a complex number.
Yes. Well, I'm not quite sure, but for a single particle, so in this case, for example, if I remember for the Fitka-Einstein paper, you just make calculation as the same, following the same rules of Born rules for single particle.
Yeah, I mean, there's like a Gleason theorem. You calculate it in the way that you're used to calculating it in complex. You just take modulus squared of the overlap for pure states. And for mixed states, it's again just it looks like the trace of some joint thing times a positive semi-definite turn on a matrix. So and they did do it the right way.
Yeah, sure.
Is there any proposal for quaternionic quantum mechanics for many-body system?
Well, one of these problems in quaternion quantum mechanics is that the tensor product is not very well defined. So the most of the theory is just for single particles. So there is one paper about to study multi-party system using entanglement, but they use a particular definition of a tensor product. But people are not so convinced that this is the correct way to do because you don't have a full recipe for a multi-party system.
Yeah, so, I mean, the problem is that if you, like if you want a good tensor product, then you want something like a symmetric monoidal category. But the scalar monoid in any symmetric monoidal category has to be commutative. So like at the level of Hilbert space, you can't generalize quaternionic quantum mechanics to have tensor products. So that's actually a theorem. So there is no tensor product. But if you like allow yourself to go up to the level of, like go up a level higher, go up to the level of algebras, then there is a way to combine quaternionic systems in a nice way, like in a category theoretic way where you've got some symmetric monoidal. And it's a little strange, like when you combine two quaternionic things, you get a real thing. If you combine a real thing and a quaternionic thing, you get a quaternionic thing. So there's a way to do it. It's
okay.
It's
yeah, well, I don't know. If I didn't know, but.
On that same topic, is there, if one has a theoretic proposal on the table for how to do quaternionic quantum mechanics for composite systems, does that provide new opportunities for experimental tests?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
Maybe Matthew, I don't know if you thought about that question.
So here we just look for a particular phase, the non-commutativity of phases, but could be another FS that we don't know exactly. So for example, one question is, if you take the limit for the wave function, so the quaternion wave function, to the limit to the complex case, so we will recuperate complex quantum mechanics, and the question is still open because, so for example, if you take the Ehrenfest theorem, which is basically, when you take the limit and the quantum for the complex quantum case, you get with the Newton equation. So, but in the quaternion case, it's not the case. So you made the limit to the complex case, but you don't end it to the Ehrenfest theorem. So to be honest, I don't know where other Fs can be described to distinguish quaternions in quantum mechanics, but it's a still open question.
More questions? All right, thanks, Lorenzo.